Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. It's show number 75, and this week we're really pleased to be joined by Joe Evil Chutney Baker, who comes along to talk to us for the first time about all sorts of homemade camera exhibitions and projects that he's working on. So I hope you enjoy listening as much as I enjoyed talking to him. Hello and welcome back to the show, back to the Lensless Podcast, show number 75. So we're without Corey this week. He's off in the wild somewhere. So Corey, hope you're having fun. But I'm very pleased to be joined this week by Joe Baker, Evil Chutney to those in Instagram and Twitter world. How are you doing, Joe?
Oh, very good, Andrew. Nice to be here. Long time listener, first time caller.
Yeah, well, it's lovely to finally have you on. So just before we talk to Joe, I'll just thank our guest 2 weeks ago, Matt Lethbridge, who joined us from the wilds of Yorkshire. So thanks, thanks, Matt. And what else have I got to say? Nothing. We've got some coffee donations. We'll do those at the end. So, Joe, lovely to have you. We've been on we've been on a few walks together and a few meetups. London. When was London?
I think that was a couple of years ago. I think it was after the. I've got a few in Norwich when you came for the World Pinhole Day.
Had we not met before then? Maybe not.
Had we not?
I don't know.
Time flies.
Anyway, we'll talk about World Pinhole because we. I didn't make it to Boston in America, but I'll be here, keen to hear what you what a good time you had there, I think, by the looks of it. And we've got loads of other things to talk about. But first of all, why don't we just take a few minutes to for you to tell our listeners a bit about your background and how you got into pinhole photography?
Okay. I think I've kind of always been taking photos.
So I'm sorry about that, folks. We've the long-term listeners will recognise the anchor gremlins. We've been without the anchor gremlins for some time, but both Joe and I have restarted our broadbands or done some trickery. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll be good from here on. I'll try and get my editing scissors out at the end of the show. So, Joe, you're back.
Oh, great. So I was...
you were just starting to introduce... Well, you might have been waffling on. I don't know how long you kept talking for. why don't you start again from how you got into photography and your journey towards pinhole? We'll keep our fingers crossed for the for the line, for the connection.
Okay, so even from when I was a small child, I enjoyed photography. I think I've always enjoyed looking through a viewfinder. Back in the 1980s and early 90s, film photography was all we had. I suppose point and shoot cameras were all most people had. More recently I got into digital photography about 2001, and was very proud of my 3-megapixel Fuji camera. But more recently I got entry level DSLR and thought, I'll get a Nikon, and then I'll be able to use all those wonderful Nikon lenses that everyone's always telling me about.
Oh, dear me, Joe, if you can hear me still, we've lost you again. So that's...
No,
you're back. There we are.
Oh, okay. I wonder if it's anything to do with my phone going to sleep, so I'm going to set the display to stay on. But, nice Nikon DSLR, but realized I couldn't afford any more lenses for it. And then I heard that there was this thing called a pinhole lens that you could make for yourself. And I've always enjoyed building things. So I got a beer can and some scissors and a pin, and a spare body cap, and
went from there.
Lo and behold, a whole new world of sort of slightly fuzzy otherworldly imagery was opened up.
So you're doing yourself a disservice, I know, because you've got a background in the arts, haven't you? Go on, if you can hear me. Background in the arts. Oh, dear me. Well, I know Joe's got a background in fine art photography. There he is. Is it fine art photography or just fine art?
No, it's fine art.
Yes.
It was mainly printmaking that I did at art school, etching, screen printing, with a little bit of bronze casting and welding thrown in.
Excellent training, ready for making your own pinhole cameras.
Well, yeah, it's, I don't know, maybe it's because I grew up watching Blue Peter or something. Or watching my dad using tools. He's a keen wood turner now. Mm-hmm. I've always liked making things, and I think that's what I love most about pinhole, is that you're not relying on what companies think you want to shoot with. It's, you can make something from scratch, tailor-made to what you want.
Yeah, and I think out of all my pinhole friends who I've actually met up with, you're the one who just seems to make pinhole cameras out of pretty much anything. I relate to you with film canisters. That's one of your favourites. Every time I've met you, you've whipped out a film canister. And just recently, so we'll talk about film canisters. I've seen self-developing camera. Folks, if you want to see the sort of antics that Joe gets up to, probably the best place would it be could go to your Instagram site?
Yeah.
So go,
yeah.
Evil_Chutney.
That's the one.
That's the one. So why don't you talk a little bit about some of the? Let's talk about some of the cameras that you've been making. So the one that most catches my eye recently, because it's to do with the Homemade Camera podcast, is this self-developing camera. So there's a picture on your Instagram of this. I can't tell how big it is. Is it a film canister or is it something bigger than a film canister?
It is. It's a film canister. And obviously you can't see this, but I'm holding it in my hand now.
This is great. It's radio. Great radio.
Yeah. I will paint a picture with my words. So it's about the funnel's the biggest part of it. It's about 8 inches tall. It's a film canister with two tubes going into the lid. One of the tubes goes round in a circle and up to a funnel, which is where I pour the liquid in. And the other tube is bent over just as to let air escape when liquid's being poured in.
So both of these presumably act as de facto light traps, because light doesn't go easily round corners. Is that right?
Yes. So it's some black silicone tubing, and light can travel along it in a straight line. But if you bend it at 90 degrees, then almost no light is visible down it. So going round 180 degrees or 360 for the length of the exposure, seemingly not enough light comes through to cause any problems. I hot glue gunned it onto a little bit of foam core just to stop it falling over. I have only shot it the once, just to check that it worked. I suppose really it's after I heard Ethan talking about it on your podcast, I couldn't get the idea out of my mind. I knew I had to build something, but I just went for the simplest thing I could think of, checked that it worked, and now I realize that I've got this weird looking thing that I've got no use case for it. It's not I've never been out with a pinhole camera and thought, oh well, I brought the chemicals with me, if only I had some way that I could do the whole process now. Yeah, it was a bit of fun.
So I think at some point we're supposed to be, Corey and I are supposed to be getting involved back with the homemade camera guys to see how folks have got on. I know there's a few lensless attempts. Mostly, I think listeners of the Homemade Camera podcast have been into it. But I certainly know you and Kath Cartman, who you know as well. I think she made one. Not sure who else, but I had every intention, but I have lots of good intentions. So you use monobath in this. Was this a homemade monobath or one that you purchased?
No, it was the Ars Imago two-part monobath that I got from First Call.
Yeah, so monobaths are sort of the flavour of the month, aren't they? They've been around a long time. If you look in Steve Anshel's book, The Darkroom Cookbook, he's got some recipes for monobaths. But they seem to have moved on apace with certainly the Ars Imago. Is that right? How do you pronounce that? R-A-R? I have to be careful.
I pronounce it Ars Imago, but
yes,
I think that's...
Imago, yeah, that's it. Yeah, we won't refer to it in case I turn it into a swear word.
I think it's like an insect.
Is it?
Isn't that a stage that an insect goes through, an imago?
Oh, I've no idea.
I'll get my dictionary later and find out.
Well, I've learned something else. I always learn all sorts of things on the show. So monobath clearly for self-developing cameras. Or if I ever get around to using it, my lab box will also probably use a monobath. At the moment, it's still behaving as a microphone stand. So you're using paper negatives, presumably? Little bits of paper?
Well, I was, because I've got a dark room that I built in my house. So under a red light, it's really easy to load paper. Mm-hmm. But my friend Tom Barrett, he's at Load of Barrett on Instagram. He has lent me his. I've got temporary custody of his photographic paper collection. It's stuff that he's been given that sort of I think some of it's 20 or 30 years old, and it included some sheet film. These sort of 30 by 40 centimeter sheets of Agfa Game Tone.
That's 8 by 10, isn't it? 30 by 40 must be
centimeters. So 12 by,
oh, I see,
whatever.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's 8 by 10 inches, isn't it?
There, it's bigger than that. I mean, it's like a A3 size.
Okay,
shall we
I'll
say?
I'll believe you.
And that it's orthochromic.
Okay.
I can work with it as long as I don't get too close to the red light. Then I can cut it down to size and load it into pinhole cameras whilst being able to see what I'm doing.
Yeah, so it's very similar then to the what have I been using? Oh, the X-ray film I've been using. So I've been developing X-ray film today, and I developed that with a red light on, although I do switch it on and off because I don't trust it, because it's never really sure whether it's going to fog it or not. I think I've been okay so far, but I do turn it off in between turning the negatives over in the developer.
Yeah, well, you can always test it. I mean, I cut a little piece and placed it on top of the safe light, and lo and behold, that did expose it. But
it will.
That's But it's great being able to have sheets of film that I can cut down to size. And I haven't put any in my largest pinhole camera yet, but I do plan to.
Is that the 5x7 pinhole camera?
Well, that was my biggest until a friend gave me a 5-liter beer keg.
Oh, I saw that. The one that's painted blue. Is that the one?
Yes. Yeah. And I don't know if you can hear this. It's hollow. It's got no beer in it anymore. But my friend Gavin, who gave it to me, knew that as soon as I saw it, I was going to want to turn it into a camera. And that can hold an 8x10 sheet of paper. Toby Vandeveld has inspired me to cut some 120mm sizes, because that seems to be the hot new size everyone's talking about.
120mm is just the perfect size for any pinhole camera.
Yeah, I'm going to cut some 12cm circles and see what I get.
Yeah, see, some folks will be thinking, what are they talking about? So if you're not up on the 120mm gate debacle, M from Emulsivers become obsessed with people not using the term 120mm, which is just not a term. It's just an affectation. But I'm glad to see you're using 120mm film, Joe.
Well, I will be, and rubbing everyone's noses in the results. No doubt.
So I've got a picture of it on Instagram from a few weeks ago. Kath Cartman says, "Are you getting some funny looks? You're going to get hassled by the peelers. Is that a keg pinhole?" So you've got, if you want to see the sort of things that Joe shoots with, there's his keg pinhole camera with his "Pinhole is Not a Crime" sticker on the side. There are three film canisters and a very Norwich pinhole camera, which is a Coleman's mustard tin. Excellent stuff.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's, you know, when I look at that, it's all I see is a 60mm film holder.
Yeah. Do you have just shelves and cupboards full of tins and things that you just pick up?
I do have a shoebox that I keep under the workbench in my dark room.
Shoebox isn't big enough. But haven't you got like tins lying around? Yes, it will be overflowing.
Yeah, and I keep my because I'm that glamorous. I keep my film canister cameras in a plastic sandwich bag.
Yep.
Weatherproof.
Keeps the dust off.
Yes. Yeah. Shelving is what my dark room really needs at the moment.
So we'll talk to you about your dark room, because I'm very keen, because I know you built your enlarger, so not everyone builds enlargers. But just finishing me off on this pinhole camera in a beer keg. So you've got, where's the pinhole? Is it under that sort of knurled knob thing on the front?
Yeah. So that is, that's a lovely bit of pine. It was a broom handle. It's about half an inch of broom handle that I had left over from another project. That's the lens cap that has got a piece of felt glued over the top of a neodymium magnet, so it will stick onto the side to cover the pinhole.
I love the sound effects.
Well, I've got there's more to come. I used a Dremel with a diamond wheel cutter to cut a circle out of the top to make it top loading. It's got a piece of acrylic that's been spray painted black on one side and some foam from a craft shop to act as a light tight lid. And then I've got, the inside's been sprayed with matte black paint. And I've got more neodymium magnets that I use to stick the film or paper on the inside.
Well, have you published pictures from this yet? Are they on your Instagram?
Well, as I tend to do, I spend more time building cameras than actually using them. So
Right.
I have published, I've put a couple of photos on Instagram, but I think I have only taken two photos with it so far. I mean, I'm not deterred by the strange looks I get. Actually, mainly I get thirsty looks from people who think I'm walking around with 5 liters of beer.
Well, you should have kept the, because presumably this had something like Adnam's Ghost Ship or something in it, and it's been spray painted blue on the outside, has it, or
Yeah,
was.
it was some St. Peter's ale. I used some masking tape to keep a few bits of it, so it still says "Drink Different" on it. 5 liters,
Oh yeah, I can see that.
and I kept the visible the bit that says "Non-returnable. Please recycle." Yeah, I took them at their word.
Love it. Well, share more pictures. We love to see cameras, but I really love to see images. So, Joe, what about your darkroom then? Because I'm sure when I last spoke to you, did you have a darkroom? This is fairly new.
In the last year,
Yeah,
I guess.
okay.
Yeah, it seemed like the logical next step. A friend had again on long-term loan, I've got a friend's dark bag and Jobo daylight tank. And actually with the daylight tank, because it allows you to load 35 millimeter film in daylight, all the loading happens inside the tank. You don't need a dark room, but for doing things like, well, obviously, actually doing photographic prints, need a dark room. So yeah, I had a spare room. It was the study, but thanks to great generosity from people like Alex Yates and John Madison. I've been lent enough stuff that I was able to. I think I had to spend about £100 on parts, and that was maybe sort of like an extractor fan, and some blackout fabric. So I ran up a blackout curtain on my sewing machine, then with lots of duct tape. Yeah, I was able to turn a spare room into a dark room.
Come on, you made an enlarger.
Oh, well, yes, yeah. I mean, I mainly use one that I've been lent by a friend. So I do have a proper enlarger for 35 mil. But I've had some medium format negatives,
Right.
and it was. I wish I knew his full name, but it was Dan K on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
He's made a I think he sort of made the simplest enlarger he could think of, and that just inspired me to do the same. So I bought an enlarger lens off eBay that came with an M39 mount attached to it, and the rest is just a foam core, some tracing paper as a light diffuser, that doesn't work too well. That's the only thing I think I would change if I did it again. And then the light is I went to a charity shop, bought a lamp for £3. And stuck an LED light in it, and Bob's your uncle. It's surprising how simple these things are, if you've got the tools and the time.
Yeah, because you don't need a set of condensers, because if you've got a light source, you just need some way of diffusing it. So in a very simple in a very simple way, it could just be an opal, old-fashioned, heavily diffused opal light bulb. But more often than not, there's something, isn't there? There's some kind of diffuser. It could be you know, it could be, as you've used, tracing paper, but it could be some other opaque material, as long as the light can shine through it.
I was recently given a flatbed scanner by some friends and bought some frosted acrylic to diffuse light on that, and I think that would be a better than tracing paper. But whilst I built it to have removable film carriers, I didn't think I would need to change the diffuser. So at some point I might take a Stanley knife to it and dismantle it to change that.
Well, folks, you can see Joe's enlarger again on his Instagram page. Next to some prints hanging up, some pictures shot around Norwich, I guess. I don't know whether they're taken on your homemade enlarger or your 35mm.
Oh, let's see. Actually, I'll tell you what. I'll just open... If I open my Instagram feed, I can have a...
I love your Instagram feed because it's so it's so eclectic. We can just talk around your Instagram feed.
So the enlarger, the print. Well, actually, some of them were photos from when my brother-in-law was doing a duathlon. So that's why there's someone running past.
Right.
Then those prints. I think one's. Are you looking at the one where they're hanging up drying?
Yeah, with your clothes pegs. Looks like from your shower rail. So you've got some. You're full of ingenious money saving tips. You've got plastic shower hooks with pieces of cat gut or something. Thread through clothes pegs.
Yeah. Works. I mean,
that works, doesn't it? It does work if you're still there, mate. You can go and look at Joe's. Sorry, mate, we lost you there just for a minute. Your pictures pictures hanging up with your clothes pegs.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the Patterson make ones that I'm sure are excellent, but all they're doing is the same thing as clothes pegs. So
I'll give you a tip though. I would use plastic ones because plastic don't absorb chemicals. And you could get some cross-contamination if things aren't properly washed. If things are properly washed and, you know, full fixer removed and all that sort of stuff. But wood does hold contaminants, whereas plastic ones are easier to keep clean. That's your top tip for today.
Oh, yeah, maybe I'll have to pop to Poundland and invest.
Are you short of any other bits of darkroom gear? You should have hit me up. I've got all sorts of stuff lying around. I've given most of it to Neil Piper over the last year. Are you still sure? Are there any specific bits you're short of? And don't say large format enlarger.
No, I mean that's the thing. It's because lots of people have been. Have kindly lent me stuff. I mean, at the moment, I seem to have everything I need. It's one thing I like is how little you actually need. It's a lot. The process can be a lot simpler and a lot cheaper if you're, you know, you can. I mean, it's like a washing up bowl works fine as a wash bath. I'd rather spend my money on film than sort of fancy equipment, if you know what I mean.
Good for you. Excellent stuff. Tell us a little bit about Paper Jam.
Oh, okay. This was something that myself and Tom Barrett, at Load of Barrett, cooked up. It's we used to have lunch together sometimes when we worked at the I used to work at the Broads Authority, and we'd have lunches together, and he told me about this group in London called the Photocopy Club, who have exhibitions where all of the photos are printed out on a photocopier. So we thought that idea was so good, we'd steal it. And for the last 3 years at the Playhouse Bar in Norwich, we've had group exhibitions where people email us their photos and we get them printed out on in black and white on an office printing machine, and then virtually wallpaper the walls with people's photos. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I think what I like most about that is that when something's printed out A4 or A3 on an office printer, it doesn't matter whether it was taken on like a Sony mirrorless camera or someone's camera phone or a disposable film camera. They all work together.
Yeah,
it's
well, you've got a because you've got a consistent image size, and you know they're all black and white, I think, aren't they? And they just kind of work. Now, you had a bit of a theme, didn't you? I think this year.
Well, we wanted to. I think it's we weren't able to put as much time into the organisation as we wanted to. As you know, life gets in the way, as it often does. It can sometimes be a bit hard to get photos from people for exhibitions. Even people who've take photos all the time, if you ask them, they'll say, "Oh, well, I don't have anything to submit." But
well, if I found something for you, which I did, I'm sure most people can with not much effort.
Yeah. Well, I mean, talking about exhibitions, do you want to talk about the one that we've been kind of planning together?
Well, more you than me, but yeah. So this fits in with you can tell the story of how we came upon the little venue in Norwich if you want to, but it harks back to World Pinhole Day, doesn't it, in Boston last year?
Yes. Yeah. And it was, as has been mentioned on I think more than one podcast, some people who weren't able to go to Boston, Massachusetts, went to Boston, Lincolnshire.
We did.
if I could have been in two places at once, I would have been there with you as well. I thought it'd be nice to. That's all the excuse I need to have an exhibition. So I thought it'd be nice to pool our resources and maybe have a sort of Boston to Boston exhibition, or even just a pinhole photography exhibition.
No, I think it has to be pinholes and it has to be Boston. Now, you've got it's very easy at this end because there's me, Wendy Chapman, who just made some staggeringly good pictures, embarrassingly far better than anything I made, and Neil Piper. I'm not sure whether Neil has shared any or not, so maybe he just had a complete balls up. And Jimmy Hickford, who normally goes out and just makes one picture all day. So I imagine between us all we'll be able to rustle up at least a dozen pictures, I would think.
Yeah, well, and it's yeah, we the last time, I think it was the last time we met, you walked into a cafe with a bomb.
I did, yes, and everyone ran out.
yeah, it's that beautiful large format bomb camera. Mm. And we got talking to the people who run the cafe, and they always have art up on the walls, and they don't charge anything to have an exhibition there. In fact, I popped in to see them earlier in the week, and recently there's been an exhibition of photographs, and I think it was 12 photos that they had up on the walls.
Is that about the number you think that we're going to have to aim for?
Depending on the size of them.
So 6 from USA and 6 from UK, I guess we could do that.
Yeah, it's and I have mentioned this to Alex already. I think this might be I think this will be news to the rest of the get together gang. I think the more photos we can get, the better. They've kindly said that we can exhibit in February next year.
You better start. I see how I changed from we to you. You better start getting the ball rolling. What do we need? And when Alex Yates did his little exhibition in the cafe down the road in Norwich to coincide with World Pinhole Meetup in Norwich a couple of years ago, we gave Alex either 8x10 size print. I think it was 8x10, or he printed them out himself. I certainly made a darkroom print and then spray glued it to some thin foam core, and then he just pegged them up really in Harry's bar. I want to say Harry's bar? Frank's bar.
Frank's. Yeah.
Brother of Harry. Yeah. So you know, you could, because we're not talking about framing pictures, are we? We're just going to put them up somehow.
Or are you? What I was thinking, if we can agree on a standardized size, I could get a dozen IKEA frames.
Yeah, they're not expensive, are they?
No, and you know, just as a temporary way of showing the work. If people can send me darkroom prints, that's perfect. If not, if people can can email me good quality digital files, then I'll find a way to get them printed at a reasonable standard.
Well, what we'll do, because this isn't just folks listening, this isn't a general call. To qualify for this, you would have had to have been either in Boston, Massachusetts, on World Pinhole Day 2019, or you'd have had to have been in Boston, Lincolnshire, 2019, and so that limits the field somewhat. But
if we want to restrict it, it's I think if we if it gets to Christmas and there's just you and me,
yeah, then we might be less fussy.
Yeah, but it's also it's tricky at this time of year, because people always want to put things off until after Christmas, and then suddenly you're at February and
I think I don't know what size wall space. We can have this conversation offline. I think it's probably the best thing, but maybe 8x10 type prints. But we'll talk about it later. But I love the idea of World Pinhole Day being celebrated on both sides of the Atlantic. So you mentioned the term get together. That might be confusing a few folks as well. So we've mentioned this once or twice with guests on the Lensless podcast. This is the, what does it stand for? Great. Something like International Transatlantic Together.
Okay.
I think, did you not realise?
It's an acronym. It is. I'm not privy to it.
Yes, I think it's Great International Transatlantic. That's what it stands for. Something like that. I'm sure if I've got it wrong, Alex or Moni or someone will put me right. But this year we're in Dublin. Next year we're in Dublin.
Yes. Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
So, folks, if you want to meet all kinds of awesome folks, some of whom have been on this podcast from the US of A and from Holland and Germany and Slovenia or Slovakia, we don't know, one of those.
I checked Pinhole at Pinhole Guru.
Yep.
He's Joseph from Slovakia. It'd be lovely if he's able to make it.
So it really is a phenomenal event. People from America, people from Europe, and Great Britain, depending on whether we're still inside or outside. And this year it's in Dublin. Last year it was in Boston. This year it's in Dublin. It's the weekend of, I want to say, the 26th of April, somewhere around there.
It's the last Sunday in April.
Yeah. So I have, Julie and I have got four nights already booked in an Airbnb, and we have our flights booked. How organized are we?
That's incredibly organized.
I know.
But it should be lots of fun. It's Pinhall people are definitely the best people.
Yeah.
It's you couldn't meet a friendlier bunch.
No. All mad as a box of frogs, but
We do all have that in common. It's people who are prepared to stand around for 20 minutes to make one photograph.
Well, look, it's going to be raining, isn't it? Because it's Ireland and it's April.
Yeah, Brendan has said that he's looking forward to showing us the rain. I mean, I've still got the waterproof disposable camera that I took to Boston. So I'll reload that to bring that along. And, pinhole cameras work underwater, don't they?
Well, so, yes, we have had an underwater pinhole photographer on the show, but not sure if they...
If they can come with a plant growing inside them, then a little bit of rain.
Yeah, so we look forward to that. And if you want to get involved and come along to the 2020 Git Together in Boston, no, sorry, in Dublin, in Dublin, then there is a Facebook group. I mean, you can hit me up on Twitter or somewhere, or Alex or Joe, or you can head over to Facebook and search for the group called World Pinhole Photography Day Get Together. And a gentleman by the name of Brendan Comey is the gracious host. I'm rather hoping we might get him on shortly before the thing kicks off, and just to get us all excited. So I think I fly out there on the Thursday, and there are things planned for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Is that your understanding, Joe?
Oh, well, I mean, I've stopped using Facebook a couple of years ago, so I get all of my information secondhand.
So, which is why I can never, when I think to look for you on the Lensless Podcast Facebook group, I can never find you.
Yeah. Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, they're good. The Facebook group's really taken off, and it's very interactive, and it doesn't have any nonsense going on. It's very, very friendly, like the community in general. But the trouble is, you can't just be a member of it without being a member of Facebook. So, and Facebook isn't everyone's cup of Horlicks, is it? So, some other things you've been up to, young sir, is an exhibition of, I don't know whether it was pinhole pictures or not, but I don't really care, because it was an exhibition in a phone box in the wonderfully named village of Prickwillow.
Yes, it's rude in so many ways.
Tell us about that then.
Oh, okay. In the middle of the Fens, mm-hmm. There's a little village called Prickwillow, and the rest of the country, it had a red phone box. But because the public phone boxes have fallen out of use, the parish council there were able to buy it from British Telecom for £1. Someone had a spare pot of red paint, so they spruced it up. And there's a fantastic potter who lives in the village, Sonia Lewis, who organises monthly exhibitions. And when I found out about this, I had to get in touch and ask if I could have an exhibition there. And 2 years ago, I had an exhibition of just sort of miscellaneous photos. But this year it was, I sort of went back to my fine art roots and did something a bit more conceptual. It was three photos of Sir John Soane's mausoleum, onto which I had monoprinted using acrylic ink a red color to draw a parallel between the red foam box and the mausoleum on which the shape is based. Not everyone realizes that the red foam boxes are based on a cemetery monument.
Are they? Well, no, I've just seen a picture of it. Now, I never knew. I think I've just seen a picture of it. So there's a picture on your Instagram feed. It says exhibition preparation. And there is next to the rubber duck and the comic skeleton thing. There's a small print, which is obviously in a cemetery. Is this the mausoleum you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. So
wow, I've learned something else. So this is whoever the dude was you mentioned. This is his mausoleum, and you've painted it red, and it looks like a phone box.
Yeah, and that's because
Knew that.
I think it was Giles Gilbert Scott was designer who designed the K2 foam box, the classic red foam box with a slightly domed roof.
Yep.
He took inspiration from the mausoleum that Sir John Soane, another architect, had designed for his wife's grave, and he and one of his sons were buried there as well.
And whereabouts is that mausoleum then?
St. Pancras Old Church in London.
Goodness me.
So it's I knew that I was going to be having this exhibition this August. So last October, I made a trip to London with a couple of cameras specifically to go and photograph the mausoleum. But it wasn't until May, June time that I found out that there was this thing called a jelly plate that you can use for monoprinting.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you about that because I've written down here jelly plate. What on earth is that all about? So go on.
Yeah. Okay. So there's an art gallery that's on my that I pass on my way into Norwich. And there was I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, but there was an artist doing an exhibition, and she was working on doing some monoprinting. And I got talking to her, and she was using a shallow block of rubber that you can roll ink onto and then press paper onto it, and it will lift the ink back off. Anyone who's done monoprinting before will know the process. You roll out ink onto a flat surface, you wipe it away where you don't need it, and then you press paper on top, and you lift off a reverse image.
It's a bit like lino cuts and things, isn't it? Is that a similar sort of thing?
Yeah.
So at school, they used to give me a wooden-handled razor sharp tool, which you'd then we were like 14 year olds, you know, which you'd be trusted with to cut away bits of, well, when I say lino, I don't mean the sort of thing that we have on our floor now. It's thick stuff with a sort of Hessian back on it, and then or it's like making a potato print. Am I simplifying this too much?
Well, it has some similarities with lino printing, but the difference is that the block that the ink is going on to doesn't change. It's a completely flat surface, and in order order to make a picture rather than just a blob of ink, you can use a stencil. That's what I did. I drew around the photo with tracing paper to make a stencil, so it would, the ink would only go on the mausoleum.
Yeah.
And yeah, then just turned the photo over, pressed it down onto the red ink, and then lifted it off.
You could have just used photo inks or something, couldn't you, as well? Photo dyes? You could have done that.
I could have just printed the painted the red.
Yeah.
Directly on. That's true. That's true. But I think it's the printmaker in me. It's just
it
makes sense to me to.
I can see exactly. I can see exactly. I was just teasing you a bit, really. But you've done some other stuff. I guess it's the same technique you've done next to your picture on Instagram of the jelly printing. There's a picture of a house which has kind of got a yellow base to it and a slightly orange roof and some blue sky. Is that using mono printing?
That's using putting two or three different colors onto a photo. I mean, that was the first one that I did in this art gallery, trying out the technique.
Okay. So you make a mask for each area that you want to, a mask to cover the bits that you don't want to introduce color to.
So it's not entirely unlike screen printing. It's something I want to explore more, trying to do maybe something kind of pop arty, you know, bright blocks of color alongside photos of, well, I think Anglia Square is a really iconic place in Norwich. I'll maybe do some when I get around to it, do some mono printing onto photos of there.
Excellent stuff. Well, very eclectic, and I love all the things you've been up to. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is projects. And I don't know if you're working on projects or you work thematically, but it's something that's been sort of ticking over in my mind for quite a long time now. And I've got a number of projects that are bubbling under. I've got a number of projects on the go involving liquid emulsion, watercolor paper, lith printing, salt printing, pretty much all of them based around the Fens, where, as you know, I live. And we were really honored to be joined just this week by Alice Tomlinson on the Large Format Photography Podcast. And Alice was the 2018 Sony World Photographer of the Year. But she spent 5 years on a project photographing pilgrims to Lourdes, not just any pilgrims, but very specific people, interspersed with very beautiful landscape images and also religious offerings that have been left behind, and they're known as ex voto. And the book is called Ex Voto, and you really need to have the book to appreciate the sequencing of the work and the power of the editing and the way it's all put together. And she spent 5 years on this project, but Joe, the first 3 years she went off and studied, and she did an MA in tourism and pilgrimage, so she could get her head around the project. And then she spent 2 years photographing it. She kind of gave up her job in the meantime. She was a commercial photographer, but I think she still had to do some work. So with Pinhole in mind, I'm using some X-ray film at the moment. I'm using Harman Titan Pinhole camera, but I do have with the laser drilled Pinhole, but I want to do this X-ray film lends itself to a bit of abuse because it scratches really easily, and so I've got a blank Pinhole. I'm going to use one of your little needles you sent me, and make it finally get around to making something. Make a little hole in some brass shim, and I make my own Pinhole because I don't want these images of the Fenland to be too sharp. You know, I want them to be evocative and have feeling, and to reflect the way I feel about living in this landscape. And then I'm going to use liquid emulsion on watercolor paper. So that's something I'm really, and that's got me kind of really fired up and excited, because sometimes I can feel not so fired up and excited if I don't have a direction. So what do you think about working on projects in series? You know, do you have any ideas, particularly if they're pinhole related?
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a project that I'm, or I have an idea for a project using pinholes that was sparked by a colleague telling me about a children's book that he'd been reading to his children about a boy who has a bucket of dinosaurs. And you can buy these. This boy goes around with his bucket of plastic toy dinosaurs, and wherever he is, he plays with them and imagines that the dinosaurs are real and life size. So suddenly he's, in a doctor's waiting room, and it's filled with dinosaurs. And I just absolutely love that idea. So I got myself a bag of dinosaurs and loaded up my film canister cameras and had a play with them. And it's the one of the lovely things about pinhole photography is there's no depth of field effect. Everything's more or less equally in focus. And so everything's equally out of focus. So if you have the toy dinosaur on a bench or on a raised platform, and it's next to the camera, it can look like it's towering over the buildings in the distance, because you lose that sense of depth. So that's something that I want to work on more, maybe produce a series of images that can stand together as a body of work.
That's exciting, isn't it? Do you get? It's exciting to have a project, isn't it? And I can see I'm looking at some of your dinosaur pictures. You've got some shared on Instagram together with a behind the scenes triceratops on a tree trunk.
It's a shame that picture didn't come out, because that tree trunk has since moved, so that location has been lost. I think it's also it's kind of timely. I took a couple of shots, made a couple of photos of the T-Rex at an Extinction Rebellion protest recently. Yeah. And yeah, it's the thing. If we're not careful, we're going to go the way of the dinosaurs. So
that's brilliant. How did you get that to work? Because it would be great if you could get did you get it somehow? So you had I would imagine it where you had the guys walking past with their banners, and then you're set some a little bit further back, say on a table, and you've got the T-Rex there, and then you've got your pinhole camera right close to the T-Rex, and people walking back in the background, they would then be diminished in size, wouldn't they? Did you do something like that?
You can't really see the people because they weren't any close enough. But what you can see is that there's a little gazebo set up outside of City Hall.
Yeah.
Does
it say Extinction Rebellion on there or something?
No, unfortunately, there weren't any big enough banners. But I think that's that's something. That's one thing that sort of that I'd like to turn into a body of work. I think it is for some people. I think it's very useful to have projects in mind, as long as the project is encouraging you to make work. That's good. If I think there's a danger that projects can become an excuse not to work.
an excuse to prevaricate.
Yeah, I think it's... I watched an interesting YouTube video recently called The Toolkit Fallacy, and it was about this guy talking about how he always... he left college wanting to be a filmmaker, and then spent the next 6 years telling himself that he was still a filmmaker. He just wasn't making videos because he didn't have the software, or he didn't have the equipment, or he didn't have the people to work with. And 6 years later, he realized he'd just been putting it off and making excuses. And I think sometimes a project can be, if it gets you out of bed in the morning and it gets you taking photos and you're making stuff, then it's useful. Mm. If it's an excuse not to make work because you're waiting for the moment to be right for the project, then it could have the opposite effect if it's stopping you from doing other things.
Yeah, sure. And some people don't like, you know, I've had this discussion with a few folks recently, and Alex Purcell and Sandeha Lynch, we went out for a beer a couple of months ago now, and we've talked about this in the evening, and I think Sandeha's probably not a project guy. He's, you know, like a lot of people, like the sole impact of individual images, and there's a lot to be said for that too. It's whatever excites you and whatever keeps you making pictures, because if you stop making pictures, then, you know, it's, if it's something you love doing, try and find a way to keep doing it, because once you lose the love, then it's a bit of you that's taken away, isn't it? So you need to have something to get you sparked.
Yeah, and sometimes, well, for me, a lot of the time, it's making a camera.
Yeah.
It's I got inspired by the idea of a self-developing pinhole camera.
Mm.
And, you know, that week, I didn't really feel like going out and taking photos, but I could stay in and play around with bits of rubber tubing and make a camera. So next time I feel like going out and making some photos, I've got one more camera that I can take with me.
Yeah. Tate and Lyle as well. I've just seen some lovely. Well, in fact, there's a couple of pictures. Nothing really passes you by, does it? There's cans, there's small Vaseline, those little small Vaseline round tubs for wetting your lips with. Tate and Lyle Golden Syrup. Now, the Tate and Lyle Golden Syrup, I don't know, if, for our USA listeners, I don't know if you have, you probably don't have Tate and Lyle Syrup, but it's a bit like sort of maple syrup consistency, but it's in a tin. And these tins are just brilliantly designed, aren't they? They're iconic.
And it's a Victorian packaging design, I think.
Yeah, and to make a, and it's the, it would be the, is it the biblical reference with the lion and the honey and the bees
I'm holding one of them in my hand.
Do that again for the listeners. That's what a Tate and Lyle Golden Syrup tin looks like. And you've got some sample negatives next to them, which are paper negatives, I would guess.
Yes, yeah, and because it's because I didn't want to deform the tin too much by drilling a hole in the side.
And you've made anamorphic pinhole cameras.
Yeah, because the lid's much easier to work on.
That's a great tin for an anamorphic camera, isn't it?
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you just relying on the natural? So these are tins that you push down on a bit like a paint tin, then to get them off you need to lever them with a penknife or something.
Well, yeah, they need a screwdriver or something. That's the downside of these, is that it's very tempting to break your nails trying to get in with your hands.
And I suppose the other danger is you have to be careful prising these lids off, because you could end up deforming the lid and then you end up with light leaks.
So I think if they were something that I was going to be using a lot, then I think probably some black foam from Hobbycraft or somewhere would be the best bet,
But it's
because
a
then that will.
great. So anamorphic pinhole cameras, for most of you guys listening, I suppose know what we're talking about. But Joe, do you want to explain that sort of what it is? I know it has its sort of presence in filmmaking as well with anamorphic lenses, doesn't it? But in terms of pinhole cameras, what are we talking about?
I think I think the best and most scientific way to describe it would be to say, you know, those wibbly wobbly bits you get at the edges of pictures sometimes. Well, the picture is all wibbly wobbly because the light's hitting the paper at an angle. I think that's probably is. Yeah, so you can get much exacerbates the distortion from distance.
So in tra mostly with traditional cameras, or with tr even traditional inverted commas pinhole cameras, you have your pinhole, and then immediately behind the pinhole is a film plane or paper plane, be it curved or flat.
Yes, yeah, and in the same way that with the tilt and shift on a large format camera, if the paper or film in your pinhole camera is tilted relative to the direction your pinhole is pointing, then you can get the image sort of spreading out or contracting. So yeah, if you imagine shining a torch at a piece of paper, if you tilt that piece of paper, then the beam of light, the cone of light's going to spread across it differently.
So in your anamorphic Tate & Lyle golden syrup camera, the paper is wrapped around the sort of inside d diameter of the radius or circumference, one of those terms, of the tin,
Kind of
and the
cylinder.
yes the, yes so it's wrapped around the cylinder, and then the pinhole is in the lid, isn't it? So you're getting the light is traveling in d instead of the light will be distorted because it's traveling at sort of crazy angles. Is that right? That's a rubbish description, isn't it? But you can see the effect. There's that it just produces these really wacky images. Michael Weitzman, who's been on the show, is a bit of a master at using these things. And it depends how you position them as well, because you don't want to point the pinhole directly at the subject, or do you?
You just want to make sure that the pinhole is between the paper and the subject. It's
Yes,
yeah,
somehow. An angle, probably. But you experiment, I guess.
Yes, yeah, and that's I think that's another great thing about making a camera yourself. If you've spent a couple of quid on a tin and some resin coated paper, then you don't have to be precious about it. It's I mean, film and processing can be incredibly expensive, but if
Not if
you
you use coffee.
well, no. So if you take if you find a way to make it affordable, then you can experiment to your heart's content, and you don't get hung up on failures because they're not expensive. You can afford to fail, and I think miss if you don't leave yourself open to mistakes, then you're not leaving yourself open to inspiration as well. I think that's you've that happy accidents are need to be encouraged and nurtured, I think. It's
Absolutely. Your
yeah and
top tips for pinhole making?
oh well I
I
mean
mean, actually making the actual
that's
pinholes.
oh right yeah okay well I mean I've got one camera in front of me which works perfectly well, and I took a piece of tin foil, aluminium foil, from the kitchen drawer, and stabbed it with a drawing pin, and that's made some lovely photos. If you want to get a neater result, then the main thing is just to take your time and invest in a magnifying glass. I mean, I've got a cheap plastic jeweler's loop, you know, the little magnifiers you put up to your eye.
And if you're clever enough, you can kind of squint your eye up and it stays in, doesn't it? And you look like a moneylender.
Yeah. Exactly. Or a Skeksis, if you know the dark crystal.
No, okay, but some might.
Oh, it's the prequel on Netflix is absolutely beautiful. But yeah, anyway, it's if you under strong magnification, you can check your work. But really, I think if you want to just give it a go, then the sharpest pin that you've got in the house is probably sharp enough. If you've got aluminium foil or aluminium roasting tray or a beer can, then all of those things will work. I think if you want to get a better result, you can take more time over the sanding and be more careful about gently spinning the pin,
and then as you're gently spinning it, then you're sanding the other side, sanding the bump down, is it? And gradually you end up with a hole.
Yeah, it's if you Google pinhole calculator, I think there's a website, Mr. Pinhole or something, where you can put in the dimensions of your camera, or the dimensions of the pinhole, and it will tell you what a sort of theoretical ideal size would be, and you can use that as a guideline.
If you want it to be perfect, or well, it's not going to be perfect, is it? But you know, that's why I love the idea of just pushing a pin through a piece of foil, aluminium foil.
It worked, and you know that's all you need it to do is to let through some light, but not all the light.
Particularly if you just want to capture an essence of a place, I think that's the way to go. Some things I've got in mind for the Fenland stuff with liquid emulsion, I don't want it to be anywhere near perfect. I want it to appear dreamy. I want it to, you know, to be able to tell, you know, to give, to be evocative. That's what I want.
Yeah, and it's some of the most evocative images are ones where they didn't go exactly the way you wanted it to.
Absolutely.
And, also, it's as you say, don't be afraid to use the force. After you've had a couple of goes at using a camera, your intuition will guide you, if it guides you wrong, in inverted commas, you might get something better than you're expecting.
Yeah, don't sweat over it, really. Don't sweat over reciprocity. So, Joe, you've made a couple of books. I've had the privilege of flicking through at least one of them, Evil Chutney's Guide to Norwich. And yeah, Hello Marrakesh. I'm not sure that I was familiar with Hello Marrakesh, and unless you've shown it to me and I've just forgotten.
Well, it's I think, I don't know, did I show you my Yarmouth Stories one as well?
You may have done. I certainly remember Evil Chutney's Guide to Norwich.
Yeah, it's it was inspired, they were sort of inspired by my favourite photographer, Dido Moriyama.
Yeah, but you haven't got women tied up with bits of string, have you, in these pictures?
That might be Araki.
Oh, it's Araki, isn't it? Yes.
He's the one who's into the shibari and the...
That's it, yeah. I've got my...
Saturated.
I've got my photographers muddled up.
Now, don't get me wrong. Dido Moriyama has taken photos of women who probably didn't want to be photographed, and photos of women with horses who probably didn't want to be with the women. But the photos of his that I like are where he is wandering around a town and walking away, and getting a sort of almost like a gonzo style of photography, where it's about his personal reaction to the place.
Yeah, there's some YouTube videos of him doing that, aren't there? Just wandering around and using a digital camera. Just he's just very instinctive.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a book that came out recently a series of interviews that a guy did where on photo walks with Moriyama. And so you've got the discussion that they have on the photo walk, and then you get to see the photos that were made as well.
Hmm.
He was someone who could shoot 10 rolls of film on one street and then turn around and walk back and shoot another 10. You can see why he likes digital. keeps the cost down, but my photo books have been about trying to get a similar sort of personal response to a place by making a trip there, photographing it, coming back, processing and editing the photos, and then using quite a simple online service to put together little books that then give you a kind of a little sort of sequenced trip.
Have you just done these for yourself, or have you done them for offered them up for? There's quite a little mini market in selling what we might refer to as zines these days, isn't there?
Yeah, it's. I think I like the idea of making a zine that to share with other people. Unfortunately, the way I've been getting these printed is they're about £15 each, which is more than I would want to charge for them. Al Davenport has told me about a company who are very reasonable for. For zines, so
I bought a few recently off folks. I like to buy them. I think it's great to support people who are, you know, and it's a wonderful way to share your work and sit down with a cup of coffee and flick through it. And I bought a few recently. I think I paid anywhere between £5 and £10. Ten I think is the most I paid. Not that I wouldn't pay more. It's just it was fair, you know. This is people's time and effort and work. You know, sometimes money goes to charity, sometimes it just gets used to cover your costs, but it's a fantastic way of sharing your work.
Yeah, and there is something, in the same way that it's sometimes you don't feel like you've actually seen a photo until you've seen it physically printed out.
Sure, yeah.
Can be true. Also, the way that a book can tell a story with a sequence of images.
Yeah. That was particularly true of Alice's book, Ex Voto. You know, she worked with a small publisher. In fact, I'll give them a shout out. It's Gost Publishing, G-O-S-T, same spelling as the Russian standards for various photographic apertures and things. But it stands for the two guys who started the company. But Gost Publishing are a very, if you want to go to their website, they've got some really great photo books there. And they're all so very, very different as well. There's no real rhyme nor reason to the style. So I'd thoroughly recommend those publishers. But she worked with one of the guys who owns that business, and I think she started off from about a couple of hundred images and got it down to 30 or 50 or something in the end. So she didn't have massive, but then she was shooting large format, so she wasn't, and you know, it was costing her money to get them processed. But the editing was really fundamental to the way the story was told to the book, and that's the great beauty of putting your work together in a zine.
Yeah, yeah, and yes, I think it's also just the fact that now you can get a small run of 25 or 30 for less than £50.
Yeah, even if you give them to your friends and, you know, family, it's What a wonderful way to share memories and thoughts and images and ideas.
Yeah.
Anyway, Joe, I'm probably going to start winding up the show. I think we've talked about most of the things we were going to talk about. Have I missed anything that we spoke about?
The only thing I'd like to, if people take one thing away from this episode, get in touch with either myself or Andrew to take part in our exhibition. It's taking place in Norwich, England, in February. But if you can reach out to either myself or Andrew, you can find us in all the usual places. We don't bite, and we would love to exhibit your photos with ours.
So we're not limiting folks to being in Boston at the time?
I think if there's more than one wall. There's three or four walls that we can use. So I think if you're a pinhole photographer and you would like to take part, then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as @evil_chutney, or if you go to my website, which is linked to from Instagram and Twitter, you can email me, and we'll find a way to get your photos up on the wall with ours.
That's really good. Yeah, I mean, if you're a darkroom printer and you want to make a, I would think something around 8x10 size.
The great thing about that is, well, one thing, it's big enough to see on when it's up on the wall. Also, I can easily find in Norwich ready-made frames that are 8x10. If you're happy to post a print to me, I will post it back to you afterwards.
Yeah, so there we go. So get in touch with either me or Joe, and we'll have a pinhole exhibition in Norwich in the
Mustard Coffee Bar.
If you're in Norwich and you want to go somewhere a bit different, is it Dan Bridewell Alley? Is that where it is?
Yeah, well remembered. It's in the Norwich Lanes. It's right near the art school, they're run by very lovely people.
So if you fancy a pinhole picture on the wall in February when we're having our little exhibition, which is at least in part around the two Bostons, but we're going to be not so precious about it. If you want a pinhole picture, it depends how many we get. If we get 1,000, they're not all going to go up, are they? But I doubt whether we'll get 1,000.
No, we'd need to, were that to happen, then we would find some way of having some sort of other exhibition. If you get in touch with us by email, we'll find a way to get your work up on the wall with ours. If you've never had an exhibition, if you've never exhibited any of your photos before, this is a fantastic chance for you to do that. If you are doing exhibitions left, right and centre, then it might be that you just need to email a digital file or something. But we can make it happen.
We can. Excellent stuff. That's very exciting. Okay, mate. Well, folks, before we just wrap up, I've got a few thank yous to give. We have a donation page on ko-fi.com, ko-fi.com or ko-fi.com/thelenslesspodcast. And we've had some donations this last week or two. The aforementioned Michael Weitzman, who makes those lovely anamorphic pictures and uses Lith printing, Holger work. Fantastic guy, fantastic work. Gerhard Schultz, who's posts some great work in the Facebook group, and also posting great work is Dorothy Kloss. So thank you, Michael. Thank you, Gerhard, and thank you, Dorothy, for your very kind Ko-fi patreon.com donations. We used the money we'd been getting for the last 6 or 7 months to produce a little zine, the Lensless Podcast zine, which Dan Novak very kindly put together for us. And there certainly were some copies of that still available via Dan's website. So if you hit up Dan Novak, there was some images that some of the Lensless Podcast Facebook group members and podcast listeners contributed to. And I think we'll be trying to produce another one of those next year, somehow or somewhere. So, Joe, where do folks, I think you've probably already said, but say it again, because you get another chance, where do folks go to see what you're up to?
Right, at @evil_chutney, don't ask, on Instagram and Twitter, and my website that I updated recently, but not thoroughly, is joe-baker.co.uk.
I tried to look on that earlier and didn't have much luck, but I was just doing it on the phone. It didn't seem to link me.
Ooh. Okay, I'll double check that the links are working. Okay. I think it did accidentally get redirected to a friend who's a carpenter's website.
Right.
I think that's because they're both. It's I can't complain because my friends at Madison Graphic are hosting my website for free and have done it for years because they're wonderful friends. So if there's the occasional glitch,
you can't complain, can you?
Yes.
No. And if folks want to find me, they can find me at the Lensless Podcast Facebook group page. Most days I'm contributing to something. Keep an eye on what you're all up to. Sometimes we do news from the Facebook group, which we've not done this week. And I'm on Twitter as warboysnapper on Instagram. I'm warboysnapper_pinholes if you want my pinhole life, or warboysnapper if you just want my normal life. And you can catch me and Simon Forster every couple of weeks on the Large Format Photography podcast. And you can catch Curry Cannon at Pinhole Cannon on Instagram, mainly, I think, these days. And if you want to get in touch with the Lensless Podcast, then goodness me, I hope I've got the email right. It's thelenslesspodcast@yahoo.com. Maybe. So I don't promise that's correct. So, Joe, have you enjoyed yourself?
Yes, very much so. Yes, it's my first time on a podcast. And it
you did very well.
It's nearly as scary as I feared.
No, we try not to be too scary. So, folks, if you want your pinhole pictures on a wall in a cafe in Norwich, then speak to me or Joe. Send us an image, send us a digital file, send us a 8x10 print.
Slide into our DMs.
You what?
Have you not heard that expression?
Slide into our DMs?
Yeah, direct messengers.
Oh, right, yes, yeah, okay. Yeah, all right, good. Okay, that's all for this week. Thank you so much, Joe. It's been great, and we'll catch up soon. So thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.